Eyes and Shout Podcast, episode 153. I am your host, Adam Mangum. In this episode, I talk with Darnell Dixon of the Daily Herald. We talk about what he saw against UConn and what he thinks we might see against Texas. I'm joined by Matt then to review that victory against the Huskies, as well as our bold predictions about this weekend's game against the Longhorns. Once again, this is the Rise and Shout Podcast. Catch us at loyalcougars.com. Tweet at us at BYU_RiseShout. And of course, listen to us right now. Welcoming to the podcast an old friend and new beat writer, but old beat writer, Darnell Dixon of the Daily Herald. Darnell, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. It's good to be on.
So you were in Lincoln for a few years. You're back in God's country in Provo. What would you say is the biggest difference between covering the Cornhuskers and covering the Cougars?
It's a good question. I've been asked that several times in the interim since I've been back. And I think the main thing for me is I really think that Nebraska fans are much quicker to anger and much quicker to let's fire the coach than BYU fans are.
Yeah.
Because look at the success that Nebraska's had recently. It's not bad. They've won bowl games. They've won 9 or 10 games every year. But they aren't a national player. They aren't ranked at the top 10. And that really grates on the nerves of Nebraska fans who they've won 5 national titles and they expect more. But when you think about Nebraska hasn't won a conference title in 10 years.
Yeah, that's a long time.
It's been a long time since they've done anything really significant. So the fan base is a little antsy. And then you have someone like Bo Pelini, a head coach who's a little volatile and has said some things he probably shouldn't. And that mixture kind of creates a place where there are fans that as soon as they don't get a first down, they want to fire the coach. And you know, I think all fans are passionate about their programs, but I do think that Nebraska fans are a little bit quicker to, hey, we got to make a change because this isn't working. And it's because of the expectation level is just even a little bit higher than it is at BYU.
Yeah, sure. That makes sense. What advice would you give to a BYU fan that wanted to go to Lincoln next year to be the Cougars' place to eat or just some advice about the venue or anything that you might give? Because I think there'll be quite a few Cougars out there for that one.
Yeah, that should be interesting to see how that works out. I would suggest staying in Omaha. There's a lot more things to do in Omaha than Lincoln. But and on game day there, it's a great atmosphere. You know, it's college football. It's big time college football, so there's a lot going on. Make sure you spend some time in the Haymarket area. They built a new basketball arena there last year, and they really developed the area around it with some great restaurants and things to do and places to see. And so that'd be probably a must as far as I'm concerned. There's a great area to wander around and near the stadium and kind of get the feel for the town. And it's a great place. Lincoln is a great Midwestern city, good people there. I enjoyed my time there covering the Huskers. I also had a chance to cover the women's basketball program while I was there as a beat. And, you know, they love their women's sports too. They put 8,000 people in most of their home volleyball matches. When Nebraska was in the basketball tournament this year, the regional was in Lincoln. Nebraska didn't make it, but UConn was there, and they still put, I think, 12 or 13,000 people in the you know, when BYU and UConn played. So it's a really big time. They love their sports out there, and there's not a lot of competition, obviously, either in Lincoln. You got the Huskers, and that's pretty much it. But they really support their programs, and it's a fun place. And the fans are usually, the ones you meet are really great. I talk about the fans being brutal. I'm talking about the online fans, you know, the guys that jump on and want to be casually cruel, as I've kind of termed it, but the fans there are great to the people coming in to visit. So I think BYU fans will have a great time out there.
Yeah, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I'm planning on being there. So let's switch to this season with the Cougars. UConn goes pretty much according to script, at least as far as a lot of people thought. Beat handily were the Huskies, and Taysom Hill looked statistically fantastic, and even with the eye test. There were some shaky moments in the second half for the offense and the defense as well, but overall, 35-10, people are going to be happy. What was your biggest takeaway from that first game?
I think my biggest takeaway was that there's some depth in this program right now. I mean, you take a look at the fact that they were starting a couple of second-string defensive backs, didn't have a lot of depth on the defensive line because of the suspension of Marcus Johnson. Didn't have Jamal Williams back there. Didn't have a couple of receivers. One's injured. One's suspended. I really feel like they've upgraded the talent level as far as the depth is concerned. And that's important because you just never know what's going to happen. I mean, Texas found that out this week when they lost their starting quarterback to a concussion. They got to go to number two now. And if you don't have a good number two or number three behind that number one guy, you're going to really suffer. So I think that was my biggest takeaway, was the coaches have been talking all preseason about how much depth they have and how much competition there is at the positions. And sometimes that's code for we don't know who's going to start because nobody's stepping up to take the job. Right now, I think that BYU has as much depth as they've ever had, and that will prove throughout the remainder of the season. But that was my biggest takeaway, other than the fact that Taysom Hill looked absolutely terrific. And especially when I watched the replay, I noticed that when he escaped the pocket, he kept his eyes upfield and found guys. And that's not an easy thing for a running quarterback to do, because they step up, they see a lane, they want to take off. He showed great patience in waiting for receivers to break open, and that made BYU's offense pretty tough to defend.
Yeah. Absolutely. I let's talk a little bit about, so the depth chart last week was basically useless come game time because of suspensions and such, but Michael Davis starts at cornerback, and he was listed as a second guy on the depth chart. This week, it seems like on the depth chart, he's at number one, played very well. Do you think this is now his position to lose? Has he beat out Jordan Johnson, or do you think, because of the way they play and depending on what's going on, there's actually going to be all four of those guys are going to get regular playing time?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because I know that with quarterback, coaches tend to say, you know, we want a number one guy. But with other positions like cornerback and linebacker and offensive line, they want to have a lot of guys that are competing for the position. And they like to say, well, they'll be competing throughout the year. And I think with the defensive back, with the depth that they have there, especially at corner, I could see a lot of those guys getting playing time and splitting the time. And, one of the things about college football over the last 4 or 5 years that's become apparent is the pace is incredible. All teams pretty much want to run a fast pace. Now, UConn, with a new program and a new offense, they didn't seem to really want to push the tempo much, but most teams do. And if you don't have depth, I mean, a guy's going to play 80, 90 plays a game. It's really hard to play at a high level that many plays. So the fact that BYU has some depth, I think, will benefit them in that regard. Who's got the starting position? I don't know. I don't think the coaches actually know on Mondays or Tuesdays when they talk to us. And if they did, they probably wouldn't tell us anyway. So I think we'll find out when the game starts. And I think it matters to the players who starts. It shows the coaches have trust in you. But they're also telling those backup guys, hey, be ready because you're going to get a chance to go in and play.
Yeah, and absolutely.
They all will play, and I think that makes them better. Now, Jordan Johnson, you know, he's coming off the surgery. He didn't get all the work in this spring and summer. As little as maybe a week and a half ago, I know Bronco was saying both he and Trent Trammell were both kind of working their way back in. So I'm not sure Jordan is physically ready to go like he will be later in the season. So that could change, but certainly had to be impressed with what Mike Davis did, what Jordan Prater did, what Dallin Leavitt did. Those guys played hard, and they made plays on the ball. And as a BYU fan, I know some of the biggest frustration people have is defensive backs that are timid and won't go up for the ball and put themselves in bad positions. And these guys were all putting themselves in position to make plays, and that's got to be pleasing not just to the coaches but to BYU fans.
So last question about UConn. Lots of penalties. Some of them, quite frankly, were more – they were obviously calling that hands-to-the-face rule very tightly, which is fine. It worked both ways. But some of them were quite silly, late hits and different things that are avoidable. How worried is the coaching staff about the penalties? And is that something, as a team that was penalized a lot last year, is this just something we're going to have to, as fans, roll with this year? Or do you think there's going to be a change?
The coach is really today talking to defensive coordinator Nick Howell. He said he wasn't concerned about it. He said if it becomes a problem, they'll address it. But he didn't think it was a big deal. Everyone joking about the Alani Fua penalty for fishing. That's the only one that really bothered me a lot, because that one is a look-at-knee penalty, which has no business being out there for a senior. A guy like Alani should know better. But the other penalties, the late hits and the roughing, coaches live with those. They don't care. They want their guys to be aggressive. They want them on the edge. And Coach Howell said as much. He said, I don't want to coach that out of them. I want them to be playing right on the borderline of being over the edge. And sometimes that's going to come back and bite you with a 15-yard penalty, but they'll take those. But like I said, the one that bothered me was the fisherman penalty. I mean, it was a half a sack. I mean, you know, I think you need to kind of temper your celebration, and especially don't do it right in front of the official. Whether you agree that that's how the official should enforce the call is one thing. It's the rule, and you got to follow the rule. So I think if they put another 15 penalties on the field against Texas, they're definitely going to have to make some changes and address it. But I don't think they feel like one game is a way for them to change everything they're doing, because they like the aggression of the defense.
So with UT, what a difference a week makes. A week ago, I think people were very, very scared about Texas coming, you know, in a revenge type of game. But now they lose their center, 40 starts behind him. They lose their quarterback. And as much as they express faith in a backup quarterback, he doesn't have numbers in his brief time period playing yesterday that would give a lot of faith. What do you think as far as BYU is concerned? Are these injuries a massive deal, or do you think Texas has the depth where, the next guy will come in and he'll be 85-90% as good?
Well, you know, I was working on Labor Day, as I often do during the football season, and listening to the news conference from the Texas coach, Charlie Strong, and I really got a strong feeling, no pun intended, a strong feeling from that press conference that they feel like they've got a quarterback who needs to manage the game. They're going to pound the ball with their running backs and hope their defense can handle what BYU has to throw at them. I think their game plan is going to be very conservative. They hope they can control the line of scrimmage. BYU's defensive line is going to be tested. Linebackers will be tested because they're going to try to run at them and try to not put too much on this young sophomore Swoops, who just doesn't have a ton of experience. And looking at some of the tape and listening and reading some of the information about him that's out there, he did not look ready to go in spring. I think that was the consensus. And Ash was clearly the better quarterback among the group that they had. So I think the thing that BYU needs to worry about right now is how they're going to move the ball against Texas's defense, because Charlie Strong is known for how good his defenses were at Louisville. He's got great athletes at Texas that have guys that can play and run. And I think it'll be a pretty tight defensive game, at least it appears to be right now. And BYU is going to be tested on both sides of the ball, but specifically offensively, they're going to play a much better defensive team this week than last.
So some of the beat writers and those that cover the Longhorns have been calling this potentially the biggest game for Texas this year based on what happened last year. Do you buy into that narrative and hype, or do you think with a coach like Strong, who wasn't even there last year, that he's going to try to keep them more even-keeled? Or do you think that's just natural? They got pounded last year, so they're going to maybe be a little bit more enthusiastic than they might have been otherwise.
It seems to me that throughout the years covering games where it's a rivalry or there's a revenge factor that's involved, I think it might help early in the game, where not help, but be a factor early in the game. And it could be a negative factor for Texas if guys are running around like their heads are cut off because they're so hyped up. What the game always comes down to is execution, and both coaches this week will preach with their guys. We just have to do what we are trained to do. We have to run the offense and play defense and follow our keys and all those good things. BYU, their coaches know that they got the attention of Texas last year by what happened, and the Texas coaches know that BYU is a potent opponent to play. So I think it might be a factor early on. If Texas gets off to a big start, they might ride that wave. But I really think that once the game gets going, it settles into who's going to execute better. That's the boring answer because coaches use that all the time.
Right.
But I think in this case, it's true that the team that settles down and starts to execute will be the victor in this game. And the revenge factor might be a little overblown. I mean, I never played college ball, but it seemed like the guys I've talked to and the games I've seen, that's what it boils down to.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk about keys to success for BYU. Passing game looked game. Actually, the offense looked good, though the third quarter lack of scoring continues from last season. What are the things that the offense has to do in order to beat what is probably going to be a better run defense than what they faced a year ago, even if some of the players are the same?
Yeah, you know, I looked at the UConn game, and I'm always pretty critical of the offensive line because I think it's really, really crucial to how well BYU plays against some of these better teams. And you look at the numbers, and BYU ran for more than 200 yards, and you have to think that's good. But then you take away the 94 or so that Taysom had at the quarterback position, and then you look at the guys that ran the ball They averaged about 4.3 yards per carry, which is okay. And then you break it down even more, they had about 25 or 26 carries, as I recall, and more than half of those went for 3 yards or less. And to me, anything that is under 3 yards is a win for the defense. So I'd like to see the offensive line establish a little bit better running attack. And when we get Jamal Williams back, that may happen. But I think you have to run the ball and not rely on Taysom to be running out of the pocket trying to get you those yards, because I think that's that can hurt you sometimes. And you need to be able to attack what the Texas defense is going to give him. And it sowns to me like what Texas will do is crowd the line of scrimmage and make Taysom throw pinpoint passes. And he showed last week against UConn he can do that. But I think Texas will definitely blitz a lot more than UConn did. So he'll have to make some pretty quick decisions on some plays.
Yeah. So let's flip to the other side. I wasn't overly impressed by the defense. They're playing against a pretty weak offense. So the numbers look fine. But I didn't think they owned the line of scrimmage like they might have against a lesser opponent. What are the keys for this defense against what, quite frankly, the offense for Texas last year was fine. It's just their defense couldn't stop BYU. Is this just a matter of them executing that run game that you talked about against us, or is the defense, is there something the BYU defense has to do to keep them from doing that?
Well, I think it bears in almost every game that you want to put your opponent in some difficult down and distance positions, and you put a sophomore quarterback in his first start in second, third, and long, you're winning the battles, I think. And so that'd be something that I would look for, is how many times can BYU put Texas in second, third, and long. That means stopping the first down run and holding them to less than 2 or 3 yards and making some of those longer distance second, third downs, make him have to convert those. And you do that by controlling the line of scrimmage. And, you know, one of the guys that is not with the team this year because he graduated is Ethan Manumaliuna, and he was terrific at that, holding the position, gumming up that middle, and causing other teams to not be able to run up the middle and forcing some of those second, third, and longs. So they need some guys to step up that can do that. They've got a good defensive line, but certainly not a very experienced one right now. And, you know, you put Bronson Confusi at a linebacker position, but he really lines up a lot as a defensive end, so he's part of that. Remington Peck, and then the two return missionaries, Tuoloma is one of those guys. Talked to him today. So I think the defensive line's going to be tested. They get, like I said, Marcus Johnson back, so they have a little more depth. And the linebackers have to come up and fill. I mean, and they do have some guys you saw, JLD, Jeremiah Luta-Dure, or however you say his name. We just call him JLD. He stuck his head in there, fought off a block, stuck his head, and forced a turnover on UConn's first possession. And that's huge if you can get guys that can make plays. And, you know, one of the things I've always been impressed with about the way Bronco Mendenhall approaches his defensive guys and how much time they play is he builds it on three pillars. And he says you have to have fanatical effort, you have to know your assignment, and you have to make plays. And I think that when you get those first two, the third one, if it comes, that's when you see the field a lot more, and I think there's guys on that defense that can make plays. And we'll see what happens on Saturday. But, again, the defensive line has to bow up and slow down the running game, force some bad down and distances for Texas. I think that's a pretty big key.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Darnell, for coming on the podcast. Always a pleasure. Known you for quite some time, though. I hadn't talked to you in a while, so good to talk with you. And we'll definitely have you on again soon.
Sounds good. Have a great night.
Rise and Shout podcast time, Matt.
Rise and Shout.
So, I got a question for you.
I have an answer for you, my friend.
Barbecue.
Yes, the answer is yes.
Where do you stand on barbecue? Sweet, savory, both? Are you a Southern, East Coast? Well, where do you stand on barbecue?
Well,
this is very important.
It is, and it's kind of a complicated question for me. I'll tell you one thing. In 2009, I was introduced to something really wonderful. Mustard-based barbecue.
Yes, yes, I've had that. Yes.
It is
quite delicious.
So good. So good. So really, at the end of the day, when you talk about where do I stand on barbecue, sweet, savory, mustard-based, whatever it is, the answer to the question is I stand right next to the table where it's served. Where I stand.
I am with you, sir. And
I stand with a plate and too much food on it in my hands.
Okay. Important questions. brisket or ribs? I'm a brisket guy.
I'm usually a brisket guy, but if it, the ribs have got to be really good. But see, I don't do my own ribs. I'm not there yet. I've not gotten to that level.
No, I am not. I'm not that level. The reason I bring this up, Matt, is because
I need a smoker.
I do need a smoker. I've got neighbors who have smokers.
Oh.
Two neighbors right across the street. They both have smokers. Invited us over. The reason I bring this up, Matt, is because I had nothing else good for the opening. Nothing. And I thought to myself, barbecue or bacon. You can't go wrong about talking about those things.
And sometimes in tandem.
Well, I did.
They're very good.
Our parents were at my house this past weekend, I did make our famous bacon-wrapped asparagus.
Excellent.
It's very popular. Very popular. So the parents enjoyed that, Matt. They enjoyed it.
I'll tell you what. My wife makes a ridiculous hamburger patty. Next time we all get together, we should do that.
Wow. Right now I'm salivating.
She makes a... It's really good.
This is a bad start to a podcast where my stomach is... They're going to be able to hear this on the podcast.
Yeah, I got really hungry just now all of a sudden.
Barbecue.
And I think I might have to go buy a smoker this weekend.
All right, let me know. We'll come and visit you in August in Texas, and you come visit us in February.
Neither of those things are going to happen.
That's
except
terrible.
You just did that.
It wasn't August when I
was it July still when you were down
it
here?
It was July, but the heat index was 107 the day I was at your house.
So it was just warming up.
Yeah, something like that. All Mom and Dad could say when they were at my house was, wow, this is a really pleasant day. Yeah. Yeah, that's summer in Minnesota. Come back in February. We'll see how that but they said they're not going to come back in February.
Well, they need to do that thing where you live in the warm climate during the winter and you move up there in the summer.
We discussed that. They did not seem to want to do that.
Yeah, I think that's probably not going to happen.
Well, they'd never been in Minnesota before, so this was kind of, you know, their first foray into Minnesota with Dad asking about accents all the time. Did you hear
that
accent?
There are some interesting accents up there.
Oh, yes. And the thing is, it's like the East Coast. Everyone puts Canada, Wisconsin, Minnesota, North Dakota as if they have the same accent, like they do with Jersey, New York, and Boston.
Yeah, it's not the same thing.
But they're not the same. There are some similarities, but they are not the same. So when people are like, oh, it's a Minnesota accent, I'm like, that dude's from North Dakota. It's totally different. But anyway, we digress, as we usually do. Matt, we're going to actually talk about real football today.
Real games.
Football games that happened.
Actual games that took place?
Yes.
I don't even know what to do with that.
But before we get to that, Matt, let's go to Cougars in the News.
Cougars in the News!
All right. So, we're not going to spend much time at this at all. Max Hall was arrested for alleged shoplifting and drugs. Very sad story. Don't want to see that in the news for him. But we're not going to really... We're just going to acknowledge that we know that so you folks don't think we're ignoring it. And the story is ongoing as that broke today. We're recording this on Tuesday night. Anything you want to say, Matt, or should we just move on?
I think I would just add that based on what I've read, I wish him the best and hope that he can find some help to get through this. I can't imagine what it must be like.
Yes, especially for his friends and family.
Mm-hmm.
So all the best to his friends and family, and as you said, that he could get some help. Also in the news for BYU this week, other former Cougars, bad news for Kyle Van Noy. Looks like he'll be out for half the year. He was just placed on short-term IR, which is good, means he can play this year, but bad because he'll be out for a while. Not really, we talked about this last week, not much to say. And then after the dust settled, everybody was cut but Daniel Sorensen.
Yeah, how about that?
So let's say a year ago today, if I had told you that Ethan Manumaleuna, Cody Hoffman, and Daniel Sorensen were each signed as unrestricted as rookie free agents. Number one, I would have told you, no way, because Cody Hoffman was going to get drafted. Then mm-hmm. I would have said, if they had said one of these dudes makes an NFL opening day roster, I would have ranked Sorensen third out of that group.
And I might have even out of that group ranked him fourth. Because you were sure that Hoffman was going to the league.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, so I look at that group and you say, wow, you know, and good for Sorensen. Sometimes I think that this is a reminder that being a good college player and being a good pro fit on a pro roster are not necessarily the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember, you know, Hoke getting drafted, not getting drafted and making a team. And then he played in the NFL for a long time. I never remember thinking, wow, Hoke is awesome. You know what I mean? Like, he's going to play in the NFL. And then he did. And Sorensen, I think, will be a similar way. I mean, he was impressive, but I never thought, wow, that guy's going to play in the NFL. And here he is backing up one of the best safeties in the game.
But you know, what a tremendous opportunity, and taking advantage of the opportunity when it came his way. You know, a window opened up, gave him some increased playing time in the preseason, and a chance to take a shot at it. And good on him, you know, for the way he was able to take advantage of that and convert it.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So, well, that's our Cougars in the news, Matt. Let's go to recapping UConn. So we won
a real game.
Yeah, we beat a Division I opponent.
We played a Division I opponent. Let's just start there. Football is on.
Kind of Division I. We'll get to that in a second. So, Matt, I am of two minds, as they say, about this game. Okay? So tell me if I'm crazy. Well, don't say that, because you're going to say I'm crazy, regardless of what I just say. But
I'm not even sure what you just said. You lost me.
But just follow me here. Follow me into my madness. Watching the game, I thought, this team doesn't look great, and we're going to get absolutely steamrolled by a motivated and better coached Texas team, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Then the next morning, I'm looking at the box score, and BYU hit all the metrics that I set out ahead of time, except for the final score. I had 42-10, it was 35, right?
Mm-hmm.
Number of yards. Great passing day for Taysom Hill. Good but not great rushing outside of Taysom. And the defense bent but did not break very often. That is exactly what we talked about last week would be success. So, Matt, why do I still feel like BYU did not play up to their potential against UConn?
I don't know.
Do you feel the same way? I mean, how do you feel about that game?
I feel like the BYU beat an opponent they were supposed to beat by just about the margin that I would have expected. You know, I it was not. I don't think it was fireworks all night long. I think there are some things that the team needs to continue to improve on if they want to continue this type of success. I think what you didn't get walking away from the Connecticut game is that this team is ready to put the hurt on Texas that they did last year. And I definitely didn't necessarily get that impression from watching the Connecticut game, but it was a sound victory, with a couple of things that we get into a minute that I feel like that they could still work on.
Yeah. Yeah. And we will, definitely get into that. So Matt, topic one from UConn. That is the best as a passer that Taysom Hill has looked, I think. He looked fantastic.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So what is your biggest takeaway as far as Taysom is concerned? Now, the opponent has to be factored in here, but do you feel on a scale of 1 to 10, do you feel, and 10 being, I now am convinced he is an elite passer, and one being, come on, it's UConn. I could have looked like an elite passer. Where do you fall on that scale?
308 yards is 308 yards.
And 78% completions.
And that right there, I think, is the important number here. When you look at, I mean, what was this last year? It was like 53% or something, right? But when you look at the efficiency with which he was working, the yardage, the three touchdowns, you know, and then to still come out of that game with 12 carries and just shy of 100 yards, you know, I think we are looking at an improved version of Taysom Hill, which is scary in some respects, right? I mean, I feel, you know, you can see that growth, and that's exciting. I don't even remember. I'm so excited about it. I don't even remember what your original question was.
Yeah, you answered it. So last year, he started out against Virginia 13 for 40. And then, despite that awesome rushing game versus Texas, he was 9 of 26 against Texas. And he did not look good throwing the football. He looked fantastic running the ball.
Well, but that's part of the reason he was running it so much.
Yeah, yeah. And then against Utah in that terrible loss, he was 18 of 48. Okay? If you take out those three games, he was a 60% passer, about a little bit above that for the season. Okay? He had that Wisconsin game and Idaho State where he looked a little inaccurate. And then, of course, Washington was a little bit off. This is a great start. Last year against a similarly ranked opponent, he looked terrible throwing the football. Now, granted, I know there was weather and all those type of things, but there wasn't any weather the next week against Texas when he was 9 of 26. On the scale of 1 to 10, I don't know if I feel comfortable as an elite passer, but if last week I was about a 5 or a 6, now I'm like a 7 or an 8. He may have made the leap. Time will tell, but I feel much better about it.
Yeah, this single performance certainly makes it look like he may have made the leap. But you know, the other thing you've got to look at is this: the defense clearly, the game plan for Connecticut was to make him beat you with his arm.
Yes.
That was the gamble that they took.
Yes.
And so what will be interesting to see is, you know, what does Texas do now? Because I would imagine that that's been their plan coming into this is, well, we're going to make him throw. He's not going to beat us with his feet. But, you know, if he's going to throw, you know, with 78% completion percentage, you know, you got to think through how you approach all that.
Well, and here's the thing. It didn't matter. He's had 12 carries for 97 yards and threw for 300 yards and three touchdowns.
Yep.
I mean, he had five touchdowns. There wasn't really UConn had that game plan, but even on the rushing side, they could not contain him. They just couldn't contain him. So, Matt, here's what obviously, he's the star on the offensive side of the ball. I don't think there's any doubt about that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who was the star on the defensive side? Was there somebody that stuck out to you? And we'll get back to the offense of the wide receivers here in a second, but was there anybody that stuck out to you on defense where you said, yeah, they really had a great game?
You know, I was pleased with how some of the surprise starters in the defensive backfield held up and what they were able to contribute.
Yes, Michael Davis looked good.
There was a lot of attitude there, too, that I really did like. Do I feel like there was a single defensive player that really jumped out in my mind? I don't know that I really do. There were a couple that were noticeably quiet all night, or for most of the night, in my opinion. But nobody jumped out there and made me think, oh, now that's going to be the marquee player of the defense this year.
Yeah, sure. I was very impressed by Michael Davis as one of the corners. I thought he looked very good. I thought Zach Stout, you know, he had a sack, 10 tackles. I thought he looked pretty good as well. I thought Fua was a little absent.
Yes.
Maybe he's one of the guys you're talking about. I thought
absolutely.
Kafusi had the kind of game I expect him to have. Not that he's going to have two sacks every game, but he was, you know, and they were obviously looking to limit the damage he did, and he still did damage. So that's a positive, right?
Mm-hmm.
I thought the defensive line, it's really hard to judge a defensive line, but they seemed okay. Like if I was giving them a grade, it's a B minus or
I'm definitely in the C range.
Yeah.
With the, especially the interior of the defensive line. Just I don't feel like they were able to put much together. Now they said that because of some of the depth and things, that they were just on the field for too many plays. So they weren't able to do some of the things that they were hoping to. But I think they've got to get into the backfield more, and I got a little bit better later in the game, but that may not help you much against an opponent like Texas.
So on a scale of 1 to 10, I'm going to give you another scale of 1 to 10. 10 being super awesome and 1 being super lame. Where does Alani Fua's fishing little gesture go? 10, super cool, or 1 being lame?
It's a 5. It's a run of the mill celebration.
I'm telling you.
I thought the flag was kind of lame.
No, they called the rule. That's the rule. You don't get to celebrate with any kind of prescribed thing. I mean,
If it were called consistently, I wouldn't feel like the flag was lame. But it's not called in college football consistently.
No, it is not. That is certainly true.
I think somebody, I don't remember who this was, I could give them credit for the tweet. Somebody tweeted out, "So Johnny Manziel can flash his money sign, but Fua can't go fishing." I see no difference between these two things.
I see no difference between them as well. But here's the thing. If I'm getting 15-yard penalty, I'm doing something cooler than that. I mean, I'm doing the moonwalk. I'm doing something, you know. I'm not going out with my buddy fishing.
Hey, he likes to fish.
Hey, I like fish. I eat them all the time, but anyway, let's go back to the other side of the ball, Matt. So the wide receivers, we talked about them a ton this summer. Everybody talked about them. And then Taron Hook has the second most catches on the team.
Yeah, where did he come from?
I don't know, but I'll tell you what. I'll give out grades here for a second on the wide receivers. Jordan Leslie, kind of invisible. He had 2 catches for 22 yards.
Hey, I'm going to stop you real quick. Jordan Leslie's downfield blocking was
key.
Oh,
you just killed me. I was about to say that.
I don't mean to steal your thunder there, but I'm going to go ahead and steal it. I was very impressed with what I saw him doing downfield.
His blocking was amazing.
He is a big, strong man. And so, I hope that this turns into opportunities for him to also, you know, catch the ball and do some things there, because obviously he's got some real talent. But I love the attitude. I love the attitude of a receiver going downfield, laying those kinds of blocks on people, sticking with the blocks, and opening up opportunities for his teammates. Absolutely love it.
Absolutely. And Mitch Matthews looked good. Hook, whoever he is, looked good. And the running backs coming. Algie Brown caught one of these, like, rockets when there was some pressure where if he didn't catch it, it was landing in the stands, in the middle of the field. It was a nice catch. But I would have to say this. I would like Paul Lasique and Adam Hine to play some Madden or NCAA. And do you want to know why I want them to do that?
Why is that?
I would like them to learn the juke button. When you run up to a crowded line of scrimmage, instead of putting your head down and just running into people, how about you pop it outside if there's absolutely no hole whatsoever? My only criticism of the running game was we had a couple of those plays where Hine and Lasique just ran right into people, you know, without... Now, that's a failure of the offensive line on that particular play, but that's when you miss Jamal Williams, right?
Mm-hmm.
He bounces a play like out there and at least gets a few yards out of it, maybe a big play if they don't have containment set up. But, man, I have to say that they could use a little bit of that. A little bit of moving outside, Paul. That's all I'm asking.
But, you know, that could be a coaching thing, you know, where they're being told, you know, to keep it in there, don't bounce it out, run north-south, and those kinds of things.
Well, and so, that kind of runner, Lasique is, right? I mean, he's not a finesse speed guy. He's a power guy. So, and he did average 5 yards a carry. So, it's, as I said, a minor criticism. a minor criticism. Anything else stick out about UConn before we move on and start talking Texas?
I do feel like one thing we've talked about a lot is the offensive line, and there was some improvement there, but they're still not mean. And I think they're going to have to still make that step if you want this to be a really special season. You know, they rotated through a lot of personnel against UConn, trying people at different positions and some things which helped. They've got and this Louis Lapuaho, that guy's really good. I'd like to see them get just a little bit meaner and just really lay the lumber on people. I think they found a good groove. They found a good combination late in the game. It'll be interesting to see what they do against Texas. But you know, we've had the question before. You know, have we bought into what Dr. Anaya is selling with the changing of the lineman culture at BYU? I'm not quite there yet. I see some progress, but I think there's still some work there to be done.
So Matt, I have the most shocking number from Friday night's game. The most shocking number is 73.
What is that?
The number of offensive plays we ran.
Yes.
Now, part of this is because we were in control in the third and fourth quarter, right? So they went a little slower than they might have. But if you look at last year, the only time we had fewer than that was against teams like Nevada, Idaho State, and then Middle Tennessee we had about the same, and Georgia Tech actually we had a little fewer than this. So I'm not saying it's a change in philosophy, but they did seem, in Virginia and Utah and Houston, sometimes I got the feeling that they were going too fast for their own good.
Mm-hmm.
This pace, though I expect them to be over 80 plays in most games and closer to 90, this pace felt better to me.
And the players didn't look lost, and no. I think that was something early last year that we struggled with, is that the players looked like they were really battling against themselves at the pace they were trying to keep, and I did not get that impression.
Even against Texas, I just rewatched that game, you know, for preparation for next week's game. There were a couple of really strange things, like running backs running into each other in the backfield. There was a fumble on that play, and just some missed assignments on offense. That you didn't see that this week at all. So that's definitely a positive. So Matt, the news out of Texas is there are some injuries. So let's get to the tweet bag.
Tweet bag.
Andre Hutchins, that's @AC_Hutchins. If BYU beats Texas without Ash, who's the quarterback, who is out with a concussion, will the media focus be on the BYU win or on the lack of key Texas players not playing? Matt, if we did upset Texas this week, do you think that it would be minimized in media eyes?
I think to a certain extent, maybe. But I don't think that the University of Texas is approaching it that way.
Oh, certainly not.
You know, I don't think Charlie Strong wants anything to do with that conversation. But I think you beat a team twice. You beat them on the road in this type of a situation. I think that really becomes the story. And then you have the story will be about the progress of the University of Texas football program. I don't know that the headline there becomes BYU won just because there were some guys missing.
Yeah, it becomes a measuring stick for the media. If BYU goes in there and wins, what I think a lot of media members, regardless of who is playing quarterback, are going to say is Strong hasn't yet got the program where he wants it.
Mm-hmm.
Because obviously a game against North Texas, you're not going to figure out who you are as a program.
Right. And another thing I think we need to keep in mind is we're talking about a team that, you know, shortly after he came on, he kicked 7 guys off the program and suspended another 3 before we even get to where these injuries and things take place.
Yeah.
And so if you want to play that game, I mean, you can dig into that too and say, well, they're still building up what they're trying to put together. But I don't think that those excuses become the dialogue.
So Also on Twitter, at Justin Thornton. Justin Thornton asks, what hurts Texas the most, loss of QB or loss of a center? So the center who got injured 40 starts, Matt, and their offensive line is inexperienced group. What do you think hurts more?
What's interesting about this is that the backup center and the backup quarterback probably have decent chemistry. And so in some ways, you could be okay there, but it's really difficult to bring in, I think, your second string center in a game like this, depending on what we decide to throw at them defensively, and have him kind of making those calls on the offensive line. The good news for him is I don't know that our interior linemen are ready to really throw the kitchen sink at him. I don't know that you really feel a whole lot of pain there. You know, it may be a little bit of a different story, out on the edge, but I don't know if that's a huge impact. So which of those two things is worse? It sounds to me like this quarterback is a player. So I would guess that there's more question marks around the offensive line at this point. So maybe that one hurts worse.
So Swoops is a run-first quarterback. Doesn't have a lot of experience, 13, I think, total passes in his career. I think, quite frankly, it's probably the quarterback loss is worse. The center loss is certainly pretty devastating. But I think Ash, the difference between him and Swoops is probably at this point in their careers pretty significant. Not that I think Ash is, Heisman was going to win the Heisman Trophy this year or anything, but I think Swoops, that being said, if they can run the ball effectively and he can play a part in that, that could be the key to the game on Saturday, whether BYU wins or not, is if they can control the line of scrimmage against a determined Longhorn rushing attack.
I will tell you, I did over here in the elevator at work today, a couple of guys talking, one of them quite clearly a huge UT fan, and he's very concerned about the quarterback situation.
Yeah, I think people are very concerned. Darnell Dixon was on the podcast earlier and mentioned that he did not do well in spring ball. So I think fans that closely follow the team know that and are maybe a little nervous coming into a game that the players and the fans certainly want some payback for last year. But after watching that game, Matt, it was not as decisive a win as I remembered it. I mean, in the third quarter, they were still very much in the game, had they been able to put a good drive together.
Well, and the other thing to remember here is that Texas team wasn't even the same team by the end of the season.
No.
And I think that game would have had a much different complexion had it been played in, later in the year. Much less, at this point a year later with everything that's happened there. So I don't know that we could really it's kind of difficult to make a comparison between the two.
Yeah, it was kind of funny because you won that game, and then 2 weeks later we lost to Utah. And I remember on this very podcast after we beat Texas, Virginia's an aberration, we're going to run the table, and then we lose to Utah. So definitely that Texas team we played last time was not a good barometer for BYU to figure out who they really were.
No.
Anyway, so Matt, what are the keys for BYU's defense? I think the defensive unit is key in this game. I think the offense will move the ball to some extent, but what does the defense have to do? Texas is going to want to just pound it on the ground and just wear down the interior of the Cougar D.
I think what it comes down to is you got to shut down the running game. You got to prevent this Swoops from getting out of the pocket, and you got to shut him down at the line of scrimmage. And if you can do that, then you'll likely also be able to get pressure on him in passing situations. But I would start first by shutting down the run and trying to get some pressure into the backfield. If you can do that, I think you've got a really good chance in this game.
Yeah, I definitely think that is a big part of it. So BYU and Texas, the line, Matt, is coming down. Okay, started at 4.5. I've seen it all over the board: 3.5, 1.5, which basically means that if we are on a neutral site, they'd have us favored. So it's kind of all over the place. Matt, this goes to another question from Andre Hutchins on Twitter. Is, do you think that these injuries substantially change BYU's chance of winning this game and shutting down this offense?
I think anytime you have to switch quarterbacks at this point in the season, your team's going to have some problems.
Yes.
So do I think that alone changes things? Yeah, I mean, granted, we talked about this earlier. It sounds to me like this kid can play a little bit. I know that he did not have a great spring, but he's not there. You know, he's not there by mistake. You know, so I think you've got to give him a little bit of the benefit of the doubt there. But do I feel a lot better taking him on than I did feel about this game a week and a half ago?
Oh, yes, yeah. Yes, absolutely. Did you see any of their game or see highlights from the North Texas game?
I saw some highlights.
So does that, how they performed against North Texas, does that give us any indication whatsoever, especially since it'll be a different quarterback?
Yeah, I don't think it really tells you much at all. North Texas is not exactly a powerhouse program.
What?
And I think their offense is going to look a lot different.
Yeah, I agree. I think North Texas is not a good barometer. And quite similar how UConn may be, but even maybe less than even UConn. But we'll see. We'll see. It was a good start, right? Similar to us beating UConn. They beat a team they were supposed to beat by a significant margin,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, they've got us, and then a week later, they've got UCLA as well. So this is a very key. By the end of October, by the middle of October, their season will either be running really well, or they're going to be in big trouble. You know, Baylor looked really good in week one, so. Baylor looked really good. So, Matt, let's get into prediction time. We love to do over-unders, Matt. So why not do some over-unders for the Texas game?
Let's do it.
Over-under 250 passing yards for Taysom Hill.
Over.
Really?
Not even hesitate.
I'm going to take the under on that one. Matt, over-under 6 receptions, 5.5 receptions for Mitch Matthews.
Under.
Okay. Over under 20 total touches for Jamal Williams.
Ooh, 20?
20.
I'm going to go with under.
Under, he says. Interesting. I'm going to go with over. I think we're going to see a lot of Mr. Williams in
a steady dose of J-Swag Daddy, huh?
Yes, I think they will feature him a lot to try to take some pressure off of Hill. But we shall see. It's a little hard to say because, quite frankly, he, you know, we haven't seen him play yet, right? And he hovered around, you know, 20 touches a game the second half of last year. Of course, last year against Texas, he had 31 touches. So I would definitely take the under on 31. Definitely take the under. Okay, more likely to break 100 yards, Jamal Williams or Taysom Hill running the football?
Jamal Williams.
I agree with you. So, Matt, on the defensive side, more likely to happen to happen between these two things, defensive backfield ends up with 2 interceptions, or the defensive front, linebackers and such, end up with 2 sacks?
2 interceptions.
I agree. Young quarterback.
I wish I could say 2 sacks, but I think what's going to end up happening is they're going to get just close enough to force bad throws.
Yes. And he'll unload it. He's mobile, but may not be the best thing. So, Matt, it's time for us to get into our predictions.
I've been nervous all day.
I'll let you go first.
So I am still right now trying to decide where I land on this game, but I think I've made my decision. I think that that Texas is going to try and force Taysom Hill to beat them with the throw and rely on the fact that they think they have a better defense than University of Connecticut does. I happen to also think they have a better defense than the University of Connecticut, but I don't think that game plan's necessarily going to work in their favor. I think that the offense has kind of found their identity, and I think when you get Jamal Williams back out on the field and as the offensive line continues to improve, I think this offense is going to keep gelling as they go into this game. And I think defensively, a lot of this works in our favor. If we also get some people back, and I think we ought to be able to do some things to take advantage of an inexperienced quarterback. But I don't think it's a total beatdown. I don't think this is like the Connecticut situation at all. I think this is a close game. I think this game goes well into the fourth quarter and is still exciting for everybody involved. But I'm going to go ahead and predict the Cougars to come out on top by a score of 28-24.
We are very similar in our final outlook, Matt. If Ash was playing, I would give Texas a very slight victory. But with him gone, new center, new quarterback, BYU 21, Texas 20.
Oh, at one point that was my I had that same prediction.
So the one thing, the X factor that's making me very nervous about this game is our kicking situation.
Yep.
We only had one attempt on field goals, if I remember right, 33 yards, not good. Kickoffs, let's just say not very good. And the fact that they're bringing two other guys along to travel, Bronco said, to try kickoffs against Texas is not a good sign in their faith in the kicker. So at least on the kickoffs, because that was not good. So if this comes down to us needing a field goal to win it, I don't feel very confident about that.
No, it better if it comes down to that situation, we're all in trouble.
Yes, we're all in trouble. But I think a week ago, no, let me rephrase. If everything was equal and their center and Ash were playing, I would have this game as a 27-21 victory for Texas. So to answer Andre's question, I think this makes a huge difference as to these injuries make a huge difference. So Matt, before we leave, looking at the 2014 schedule, based on what the opponents did in the first week, so Houston looked terrible. Got beat by UT San Antonio, right?
Mm-hmm.
Virginia looked
in the opener for their new stadium.
Yeah, it's terrible, terrible.
All sorts of embarrassment there.
Virginia actually looked pretty good against UCLA. Utah State, not so good, but at Tennessee, so I'm not going to ding them too much. UCF looked okay. I mean, Boise State looked terrible. I watched a good chunk of that game.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, going down the list here.
Didn't catch Savannah State.
Did not catch Savannah State. Cal looked okay at Northwestern, at least statistically. So, Matt, very briefly, do these results change any of our future opponents based on what we believed in the preseason? Anybody where you say, wow, that is probably a different team than I thought they were?
I think California may be a different team than I thought they were. And I know the jury is still out. It's still early, and I don't know how good that Northwestern team really is. But in my mind, the California game was kind of a foregone conclusion. I don't know that I feel that way anymore based on this past weekend's results. And I'm way less nervous about Boise State.
So I'm less nervous about Boise State. Houston, I thought, was going to be good. This was a terrible start for them. They beat UT San Antonio 59-28 last year.
But that makes me think, you know, that could just be one of those weird games.
Yeah, but UT San Antonio has yet to beat anyone in their history that's any good. You know what I mean? They lose. They can beat UAB, Tulsa, you know, North Texas, New Mexico, but this is like you know, this was bad for Houston. Like you said, maybe it's a freak game and it doesn't really matter. I'm less nervous about Boise as well. I think they did not look great. But again, by the time they play us in October, who knows? Who knows?
Right.
But I still think we lose two games this year.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Despite the fact that I'm just predicting one of my preseason wins as a loss, as a losses as a win.
Well, and I think this game this weekend is still, I mean, you know,
yeah,
this
I'm
is
predicting
very much up
21
in the
to 20. Yeah,
I feel good about our chances here, but I'm not going to be shocked if BYU doesn't pull this off. I would still categorize this as an upset. I know that the line is getting closer, but this is no easy task going into Austin and playing this team.
Absolutely not. So, Matt, will this be your first time watching Fox Sports 1?
No. I've watched Fox Sports 1.
Oh, I watched a game a little bit. I forget which game it was this weekend. I have not... I guess I watched a baseball game too. I've not spent much time on Fox Sports 1, to be honest with you. So
I've watched a little of their
SportsCenter ripoff.
Yeah, but I don't remember what it's called.
Yeah, exactly. That's
because in my mind it's SportsCenter. But I've watched some of that. One thing that I think is interesting, and I'd be interested in your opinion on this after you see it, is a comparison of the ESPN's revamped graphics package with what Fox Sports 1 is doing.
I actually prefer the new Fox Sports 1, or the new Fox package. I think ESPN has kind of gotten a little stale.
Well, you see, they changed their stuff a little bit, and
yeah,
it looks a little bit more like the Fox Sports, the font and these things. I still wish everybody would just get rid of the stupid ticker on the bottom of the screen. It's the same six headlines the entire game, none of which I care about.
Yeah,
give me my screen back.
And if I have to see a WNBA score... I don't care that it's their finals or whatever they call the end of their season. I don't care. Get it off my dang screen. It's one of the reasons I don't watch much ESPN anymore, quite frankly, is because I don't care about NASCAR, I don't care about golf, I don't care about WNBA. And I don't now in this modern era where I can go read and watch highlights whenever I want, you will lose me if you talk about any of those things. I am out the door. And I realize for other people, it's tennis, it's soccer, and other things that I like, right? But that's the whole point, right? But WNBA, come on, just get that off the ticker, okay? Off any ticker at all. I know ESPN.
Just get rid. I just want to get rid of the ticker altogether.
Hey, I'm all for it.
Especially in the day of smartphones, I don't even need you running scores across the bottom because the games I care about, I will look them up on my phone while I'm watching the game.
Oh, no doubt, no doubt. Oh, and the BYU app, they need to be able to do the roster both alphabetically and numerically. That was kind of annoying.
Yeah, well, but I didn't use it for very long for that reason. I ended up on my iPad on the BYU website.
Oh, yeah, I ended up switching because I couldn't do it, and it was mainly the wide receivers that I was trying to figure out. Wait a second, who's that?
Who is this guy?
Juergens? Hook? Like, just not the names we talked about in the preseason at all. So, anyway. Well, Matt, real football has happened. We're 1-0. Woohoo. And we've got a game at Texas on Fox Sports 1, 7:30 Eastern, 5:30 Mountain Time, of course. And we'll be back next week to talk about Texas and preview that Thursday night game against Houston sometime early next week. Not sure when yet, but we'll be early, hopefully with a guest. Thanks everybody for downloading and listening. Check out Loyal Cougars for coverage of BYU sports. Tell your friends, tell your neighbors, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars!
The stars at night are big and bright. Deep in the heart of Texas, the prairie sky is wide and high. Deep in the heart of Texas, the sage and blue is like perfume. Deep in the heart of Texas, reminds me of the one I love. Deep in the heart.